were transmitted to Japan.
Japanese Buddhism began basically 6th century. Buddhism began in China 1st century. Buddhism began 5th century BCE. I'm going to give you an overarching picture first before I go into the practice. So Buddhism, Shakyamuni Buddha, 5th century BCE, transmitted to Sri Lanka 3rd century BCE. Up north, Pakistan, Central Asia, when he transmitted to China 1st century CE. And when he came to China, it didn't come systematically. It came randomly. Buddhism is unique because it does not have a set, structured system of teachings. It has thousands of texts, thousands of scriptures, different systems. Right? So when you came to China, it basically depend on what the missionary brought. So when he came to China, it's kind of like people will bring elementary school textbook. Sometime the next guy brought high school. Next person brought PhD. Next person brought kindergarten. Randomly it came, unsystematized. It took about 1,000 years of translation. But for the first 500 years, Chinese were trying to understand what is Buddhism. Because this text contradicts the other text. They came up with something called doctrinal classification, 判教, 思想, 批判, 教义. This is a very unique system that developed in the history of Buddhism, where they systematized and hierarchized the different types of teachings. One is kind of elementary, another one is more deeper, other one is talking about the nature of liberation, the nature of mind, like that, maybe PhD level, right? So all of these different levels, by the 5th, 6th century, what was happening in China was this very scholastic form of Buddhism. One of the most powerful schools of Buddhism that has influenced the whole of East Asian Buddhism continually until now is the school of Tiantai. The Japanese would call it Tendai. This is a school from which all the other subsequent schools reacted against. Of course, there are other types of schools like Hua Yan or other type of schools that I won't get into. So it was this scholastic form of Buddhism which during the Five Dynasties and the Tang, before the Tang Dynasty, the Five Dynasties, where all the cream of the intellectual kind of crop, they were basically Buddhist monks. In the society, the educated elite, very well versed in the Buddhist teaching, doctrine, they became monastics, and it became a very small kind of elite scholastic form. And Chan, and there are subsequent other schools of Buddhism. Chan Buddhism emerged in the 7th, 8th century. Of course, before 7th, 8th century, there were lineage masters, but it was really the 7th, 8th century emerged as a self-conscious separate tradition, reactionary against scholasticism. So the main axiom, the core slogan within the Chan teaching is a teaching without words and language. What they're really referring to is those scholastic Buddhism. Separate teaching. First, there's four-line slogan. This is the kind of normally people would say this is the essence of Chuang. First line, not established on words and language. 不立文字。Second line, a school outside of doctrines. 教外别传。Third line, direct pointing at the mind, nature of mind, 直指人心。Fourth line, awaken to Buddhahood through seeing yourself nature, your true nature. So, 见性成佛. So this is, but it didn't exist in a bubble. Historically, it can only be established on the basis of extensive doctrinal learning. Do you understand?So it was really a movement against a kind of just learning through intellectual understanding. Right? Also, it was a time when China was really ripe for really making it Chinese, really making Buddhism, a foreign tradition, making it Chinese. Right? The Chinese people love to take shortcuts.Direct path. So you have centuries of adaptation, mistranslation. For example, earliest texts were translated through Taoist terms, totally wrong interpretations. Many texts gone through retranslations, and the Chinese language also led to more nuances of understandingFor example, the Indic language, Indian Buddhism, is very specific, very accurate. There's different terms for different things. Chinese, the nature of the language is inclusive, nuance, different shades of meaning, but only one word. For example, their translation of wisdom in early beginning phase is...道, the path. Their translation for nirvana is also Tao. Their translation for wisdom is also Tao. You have like different shades of meaning and translations of in Sanskrit, prajna andPrajna is wisdom of emptiness. Bodhi is awakening. They're both kind of Tao because it's filtered through Taoist understandings. Different teachings like the teaching of no self, which is the core teaching of Buddhism. No self basically means emptiness. Emptiness means...relationships, right? Like this cup. Emptiness in Buddhism, a lot of people misunderstand it as like some kind of vacuity, space or something. No. Wherever there's form, there's emptiness. Emptiness means relationships, I said, right? What kind of relationships? It means this cup is empty. It's empty because it's made up of non-cup.Ceramic, there's white bleach, and there's a factory, the person who designed it, and this one happened to be made in China. You know, so it means in order for something to happen, it's made up of different conditions, connections. So cup is made up of non-cup, towel is made up of non-towel.In order for the cup to happen, it's connected to everything else. That's emptiness. So it's not some kind of vacuity, a blankness that you zap into. So Buddhism typically translate, have this idea of what is called the five skandhas. what a human being is made up of. Human being is not made up of body and mind. It's more complex than that. The Buddha is saying, made up of five things. Form, which includes all the elements of solidity, heat, breath, and liquid. Form. Sensation, raw data processing, pleasurable, unpleasurable, neutral. Perception, which is our categorization, pleasurable, oh that's very good, I want more pleasurable, or this is that kind of pleasurable, this is that kind. Constructions, mental constructs, form, sensation, perception, volition, based on our construct, we now respond to things. We act. Volition means action. Means pleasurable, beautiful, I want, I take. Right? Unpleasurable, I don't like, I hate it, I want to get rid of it. Right? So volition means action of grasping, rejecting. And the last thing is consciousness. Consciousness has two parts. One, you can't have sensation without consciousness, right? You can't have perception without consciousness. So consciousness saturates all previous skandhas. That's one function. Another function is kind of like a repository. It's like kind of like a bag. It keeps all the impressions that you make through volition, your action. It's kind of like a Santa Claus bag. Santa Claus has many presents, right, in the bag. For all of us, we are carrying a bag, a baggage. And because of the content of our baggage, it continually shapes our experience of the world. Now, if the content of the bag primarily is good, then you can blindfold, you take out whatever thing, it's probably good, because that's what you put in in the first place. Now, if the content of the bag is primarily negative, then you reach in the bag, you take it out, whatever is probably negative. Now, who puts in the bag? Form. Sensation, perception, volition, action. Action is karma. Right? Karma is volition. But karma is based on our perception. Our perception is based on our sensation, our raw experience. Raw experience is based on, we have to have a body to experience it. Right? We see, we hear, we smell, we touch. So these five altogether, right, this dynamic process forms a continuity. Things are continually placed in this karmic bag, consciousness, and things are constantly coming out. If a person is by nature very positive, then what's coming out by nature is a very positive outlook. Right? If a person is by nature is a lot of in this karmic mental stream continuum is primarily negative, then the world will be shaped that way. Now this is a basic understanding of what no self is. So self is made up of at least these five things. But you can't say like it is one particular thing. It's all these fives dynamically interacting, shaping our experiences, coming to a lecture, listening and reflecting. It's this interplay. So your knowledge, your experience is actually made up of non-your experience. Right? You're getting information in, you're reflecting, and you're thinking, new things coming up, so it's, and our opinions, our experiences constantly change. So this is a very basic understanding of Buddhism, what the meaning of no self is. So it's not like you become enlightened and you have no personality anymore. No. Or you have no memory anymore. No, of course not. You become more clear, clear-headed. Right? So you're no longer subjected to this pattern way of thinking. You can start to be free from this karmic baggage. Now, guess what the Chinese translate that? This, I'm just giving you context, an example of going back to how the first phase of translation. They translate the skandhas. It's called yun, yun. Right? The early translations, they don't use the character yun. They use the yin yang. Have you heard of yin yang, yang? Which is completely a mistranslation. Early Buddhist texts, you look at it, wu yin, yin yang's yin, mistranslation. So it took several hundreds of years for Buddhism, for the monks there, clerics, to really actually study through scholasticism, comparison, maybe text criticism, historical study, to understand just what the hell is Buddhism talking about. Because there are different texts coming in. Some texts talk about Buddha nature, right? All beings' potential for Buddhahood. But before that, they talk about there are beings that can never become a Buddha. They talk about vexations, they talk about karma, so it doesn't match. So it took the first phase, you know, seeing Buddhism through the Taoist lens, the Chinese lens, color lens. Second phase, Buddhist scholasticism. People actually got it. They actually understood. There are different levels of text, different depths of understanding. And the Buddha was catering his talk to different groups of people, different disciples. There's no one fixed, rigid teaching, like a wonder drug that fixes all. Third phase, Buddhist scholasticism. It is beginning in the 7th, 8th century that Chinese Buddhists start to integrate, making it more Chinese. Chan teaching is now known as the Southern Path. Southern practice, sudden enlightenment. 顿修顿悟法门. Why? Because it's built on top of gradual teachings. So we cannot take it out of context. So, oh, teaching is not established on words and language. That means I don't need to study. I just meditate. Or it's a teaching outside. It's a tradition outside a doctrine. I don't need to doctrine. That's wrong. All of the Buddhist teachings gear towards one thing, and that is freedom, liberation. Free ourselves from constructs, false constructs, from obstacles that creates vexations, emotional afflictions. So it's just different people need different kinds of medicine. So they have thousands of texts. The Chinese finally got that. They got it. So when the Chan tradition came out, emerged through many different masters, since they know how to practice, they have personal experience in practice, then they simplified the teaching into the most essential, and they continue this. Through centuries, continuation, centuries of change, transformation, by the 12th century, Chan Buddhism became the most influential school in China. It was the hottest thing, the latest trend, right? There's not one kind of sector of the society that do not know about Chan. In the literary world, right, people start to, Chan start to influence art, start to influence other areas. In the artistic world, right, from the Northern Song Dynasty painting to the Southern Song Dynasty paintings, they're making use of empty space, a big vast field landscape of no ink there, a little drop of ink depicting boat. Through form, the viewer now appreciates emptiness. Through a little kind of gesture of distant mountain, they become aware of vastness of the mountain landscape. So this interplay between form, emptiness, that come from Zen, Chan. But Buddhism in Japan began through transmission to Korea and China in the 6th century. And he adopted, of course, one of the hottest things in China, which is Tiantai. And all these scholastic schools. So Japanese Buddhism began just like China. Kind of back then, he saw China as a big powerhouse. That's where culture is. That's where language, that's where legal system that we borrow. And so you kind of look towards China to kind of borrow things. So of course, when you borrow culture, part of culture is Buddhism. You borrow Tendai. They pronounce it, instead of Tiantai, they pronounced it Tendai. You know, all the other schools. And they continue to send monks and practitioners to China to practice. Now when there's been a period where there's a kind of a gap. In the 12th century when they come to study, mainly when they come, by the 12th century, in Japan, the most powerful school was actually Tendai Buddhism. So these Tendai monks come to China, they want to study what Chinese Tendai is the latest development teaching. And they found out that that's not the latest thing. The latest thing is actually Chan. So in Japan, all the founders of Japanese Zen used to be ex-Tendai monks. They went there as Tendai monks, they left as Chan monks. So when they went to Japan, of course they can't immediately introduce us. So they still went back to their monastery and they slowly start to introduce this new version of Buddhism that emphasize not years of doctrinal learning, but the essence of Buddhism and the meditation path. So, beginning 12th century, 13th, 14th, and then Japan developed Chan, their own version of Chan school, which is called Zen. And within Chan, there are many different sub-branches. And now, America, and people are know Buddhism through maybe Zen. So I was telling Barry, Buddhism, the function basically is like soap. The function of soap is to clean. But there's different packages, different brands. But the basic function is the same, cleanse. The different form of Buddhism has the same function. Some people like this other brand of soap. Some people like another brand. So the ingredients, basically, the discovery, if you will, found it in India. Packaged or put together as a bar of soap in China. And in Japan, they put a new package. Now it's being sold to America. So that's all where the circle is, right? So this is a kind of basic background. Now, different teachers will have a different brand of soap, you know, or kind of a special ingredient, but the basic function is the same. Now, what is the essence of Chan? The essence of Chan is actually the essence of Buddhism. Except Chan believes, Zen believes, that this brand of soap is the most effective. It doesn't have too much fragrance, so you smell like, oh, people are allergic to it. It's just enough, and the ingredients is just enough to do the best possible job, cleanse. Sometimes when there's a lot of fragrance, it just, yes, it cleans, but it leaves a kind of, it leaves your skin kind of slippery. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some soap just covers up your scent. It doesn't really clean. It's kind of maybe spray or something. So from the Chan perspective, this is what I'm selling. So I have to say that's the best soap there is. Now we get to what makes it distinct. All experiences are processed through the mind. All knowledge is gained through the mind. All of our understanding. So it's very important what this mind is. Imagine if your lens is dirty or maybe colored, then everything you see is actually just filtered through the lens. Not too accurate. You see the whole world is red because you're having to wear red sunglasses. Or if the mind, namely the lens, the glasses that you're wearing, is actually defective, then you have a problem. You have a particular vision, but the glasses is really, it's not match. So you're seeing things in a fragmented way, or kind of abstracted way. So the most important thing is to, all of these practices is to aim directly at the mind. And for this reason, Chan is called the mind school. It cultivates the mind. As for rituals, Chan certainly has plenty of rituals. Doctrines, Chan also have doctrines. There are particular texts, scriptures that are quite influential to the formation of Chan thought. It certainly has that, but all of these are secondary to one's experience. One's experience and a kind of process of, you may call it two types, and both are quite useful. Two types of or two principles. One is the path of purification. You want to clean the lens. You want to make sure the lens is working so you can see clearly the path of purification. Another path is the path of recognition. And both are important in Chan. Path of recognition. This means realizing that you're actually wearing glasses. And once in a while, you can take off the glasses and see the world as it is. You see? Two particular approaches. One just cleans the glasses. so maybe it works better. Another one, just directly tell you to take it off. So you actually see things as they are. Most people are not ready to take it off. All their life, they've known their glasses. They're good friends with them. No. They're hesitant. This is what identifies them. This is what tells them who they are. So they have a lot of attachment to it. So you need a path of purification. Once you feel that, through different methods, different concepts, you start to integrate the teachings, and you practice, the lens become clean, you actually can see things better. Think, wow, this thing works. So you have confidence in your teacher, confidence in the method, and most importantly, confidence in yourself. I can do this. This cleansing is like, or cleaning the lens, it's like using the principle of practice, and you actually see the benefits, such as it teaches you to be mindful in daily life, to be mindful, to be more aware, to stop all the chatter, the continual static that's in our mind. So when we quiet this down, conversely, this meaning our minds, conversely, the world becomes clear. If there's a lot of static, a lot of wandering thoughts, lack of mindfulness, instead absent-mindedness, then you don't really see the world. You see the world through a particular kind of scattered way. So the kind of information that you can gather, piece together, is most likely partial, fragmented. This is like the lifeguard. Lifeguard must be stationary, not moving, have a distance. Then when they look down on the sand, on the beach, then if someone 50 feet, 100 feet, or someone is drowning, getting in trouble, they can see very quickly, right? That's because it's stationary. So anything that's not stationary, moving about on the beach, they can be aware of. Right? Now imagine the lifeguard is playing on the sand, himself or herself, mingling with people. 50 feet, they can't even see probably beyond 15 feet. Someone down there, they can't see. Can't help them. Someone's drowning somewhere else. Right? Likewise, when the mind is very busy, engaged in a lot of wandering thoughts, scattered thoughts, you can't see much, the world. More quiet here, conversely, the world reveals itself in utter clarity. If it's a very scattered here, you can walk down the street, pass right by your best friend, you don't even know it, because you're just preoccupied with scattered thoughts. You see? So the path of purification is practice mindfulness, you know, you purify your own behavior, your actions, you uphold precepts. You know? So through this process, more quiet, more disciplined, then you actually see things clear. Path of purification. That's like coloring the lens. You know? Your glasses before has holes in it, maybe. So you kind of fix the holes, color the lens, you know, make sure it's clear, clean it. From the Chan perspective, the path of recognition, from that perspective, you're still wearing the lens. You're still wearing the glasses. It's a construct. Most people, it's very useful, but that itself can be an object of attachment. You can say, hey, but from my lens, from my glasses, I see this, it means this. And someone else is wearing a lens of magnifying glass, they see something totally different. So you attach to your view, other people attach to their view. Still has opposition, still has problems. So the highest path of charm is to actually use particular methods to allow us to, for the first time, to remove the burden of wearing the glasses. For the first time, we actually see the world as they are, without any toleration, without any filtration. See things as they are. It's like a mirror, the mirror mind. The mirror has no permanent image carved into the mirror. Imagine if you have a permanent image carved into the mirror, then whatever, whoever stands in front of it, it's juxtaposed against this image. It's not that clear. The mirror must not have any image. Therefore, it can reflect perfectly. See? So that's like removing the glasses. When a person has confidence, conviction of the usefulness of the path of purification, usefulness of precepts, usefulness of mindfulness, benefits of meditation, all of these things, confidence in their teacher, confidence in themselves, then they are ready. Remove the glasses, and then they won't be scared. Otherwise, they move the glasses. Oh, I don't recognize any of this. So we begin to understand the true nature of things. So Chan has both of these. So what happens when we remove the glasses? For most people, removing the glasses, this is called that slogan that I said, seeing your self nature, becoming a Buddha, right? That's seeing your self nature, seeing your true nature, who we are. Except most people, they take it off, very quickly they put it back on. They put the glasses back on. So enlightenment, awakening experiences, doesn't happen like once and then that's it for the rest of your life. A practitioner experiences it again and again and again and again until they no longer need to put it back on anymore. So seeing that true nature, what is that true nature? Only person can truly experience it, understand it, or know. It's like drinking water. You don't know if this cup of water is hot or cold, or warm, to what degree it's warm. I know, because I'm drinking it. And I don't know what kind of water you're drinking. Right? So, only through personal experience. Now, what is this experience? Is the heart of Buddhism, which is emptiness. No self. When we hear this word, both words sound negative, empty, no self. Right? And we have our own prejudices, concepts, construct that we think what it is. Actually, it's very different. Very different. It's actually very positive. Because it's the true nature of how things are. Imagine if this room is not empty. Can you all move around? If the air is actually solid? Because of emptiness, there's all kinds of possibilities. Right? Because this cup is empty, therefore it can go through being wear down, or it will change, or new invention, I'm going to design a better cup. Empty is full of possibilities. It's relationships. Relationship with what? Everything that's not a cup. For this reason, now this is an easy understanding of this principle, right? An easy example. Cup is made up of non-cup. Cup is made up of ceramic. You know, the color dye. You know, the designer, the corporation. All these things come together, and then you have a cup. But when a person realizes emptiness, what happens? Compassion arises. That's why in Buddhism, wisdom and compassion are completely together, inseparable. It's actually the same thing. Why is it? Because you realize that you are made up of everyone else. So there's natural affinity, connection with sentient beings, with living beings, naturally emerges. So it's not something like learned. Yes, it could be learned, like the path of purification. We have to be compassionate, we can uphold precepts, we can try. But when a person's enlightened, at least once in that moment, what they experience is compassion, connection with all beings. They understand that there's no birth, there's no death. Death is another birth. Right? It's like cup. I drink the cup. I smash the cup. Then someone sweep it up, put it in the garbage. Garbage go to recycle. Recycle turn into another cup. Right? Or change to something else. Similarly, helping your neighbor, it's like helping yourself. Why wouldn't I do it? Compassion. Helping fellow humanity, it's like helping yourself. This is why wisdom, the wisdom of emptiness, of no self, is intimately connected with compassion. And compassion does not mean you're always a nice guy. You know? For some sentient beings, the mirror responds. At that time, that occasion, that person needs a good scolding. So you respond. Scolding. Other people see him. Is that anger? No. It's a natural, compassionate response. There's no trace left behind. Most people get anger, they still hold a grudge. Some people can hold a grudge, especially family members. They can hate their siblings, hate their parents, they can do it for 30 years. That's like permanent image carving on the mirror. Can you see clearly? That's only one. Imagine your relationship with everyone. This mirror is completely covered with carvings. You see a friend that stepped on your foot 2 days ago. You see that person, or maybe they do it on purpose, or you suspect they do it on purpose. You see that person, image, come on. That person, not good to me. What is that? Permanent, fixed, rigid construct categorizing that person into this or that. Meanwhile, that person could have completely changed. And then maybe you find out later that he actually or she actually didn't mean to step on your foot. So that's what I mean by color lens. You think this way, so we always experience the world through our own filtration. Filter it. What I think is good, what I think is bad. So it's this I, this construct of a fixed, rigid, non-changing, permanent self, which is just a fabrication. Actually, constantly, things are changing. You look at a picture, 2 years old. Oh, that's me. Which part of it is you? Is it the bones? No, 2 years old is about this big. Now you're this tall. Is it a mind? We hope that your mind is not still 2 years old mind. Right? Who's part of it? Is it? Someone, I'll give you a story. Someone once challenged this great monk, Nagasena, after the Buddha's passing. He's a great practitioner. This king challenged Nagasena. He says, you Buddhists, this is in India, this is in the scripture, you Buddhists talk about no self. Who is it that stands before me? Who is it that's putting on the saffron robe? Who is it that got here? He got confused with no self, what no self means. No self doesn't mean you become vacuity after you're enlightened, you just disappear, vanish. So he got confused with conventional self that we need to function and our true nature. He says, who is it stand before me? The monk says, King, you're a noble king. Surely you arrived here today, not by foot. How did you get here? He says, I got here by a chariot. Oh, which part is the chariot? Is it the wheel? The spokes? Maybe it's the hub. Or maybe it's that wooden frame. Which part is the chariot? The chariot and the king was very wise. The king understood the meaning of no self. Chariot is made up of non-chariots. Chariot is made up of wheels, spokes, you know, rim, frame. So all those together, we temporarily give it a name. That's called chariot. So all of our psychophysiological processes of form, sensation, perception, volition, consciousness, moment to moment to moment, they change. They're in flux. And they're constantly interacting with the external world. And all of these things temporarily come together, then we give it a designation. We call it, oh, that's self. That's my opinion. That's my view. And that's not the problem. The problem is not all of these things. There's no problem with chariot. It's very good. We should have function. We should design chariots, and we should design cars. Maybe in the future we'll design cars without wheels, like just kind of float around. We should do all that things. Just like we shouldn't deny physical bodies, like, oh, no self, so I'm going to starve myself now. No attachment. That's not what the Buddha's teaching is. Right? Just like a chariot, it's very useful. The problem now comes. Where's the culprit? What's the problem? The problem comes when we attach. This is my chariot. Don't touch it. Well, this is my opinion. You're wrong. I'm right. Your idea may be very useful. My idea may be very useful. Just different time, different place, could be used differently. The problem, the culprit, is attachment to a false sense of me and mine. The problem is not the me. The problem is not actually your ideas or your opinions. You know, apple. The problem is not apple versus another language to call apple. No, the problem is not language. The problem is not the actual thing itself. The problem is, you know, it's my apple. And I'm going to hold everything. And no one else is going to eat it. Or I'm going to save it for later. Or I'm not going to share. That's what the problem is. Or my apple is better than your apple. Attachment to self. Manifested as opinions, views, experiences. Views are the most dangerous thing in the world. Potentially. Views could make progress once their attachment to it. Then we have people to people conflict, family to family, nation to nation. We have global war. Views. Attachment to views. So from the Buddhist perspective or Chan perspective, everything is useful. There's not a single thing that's waste. The problem is not actually the thing in themselves. The problem is getting back to the analogy of the cup. That you attach, there's some cupness to this cup. There's some permanent thing about this cup.
well, this is my opinion, my view.
In fact, your opinion is made up of everyone else's view. Your opinion is made up of non-opinion. Do you believe it? You probably read it somewhere, talked with someone, witnessed it yourself, personally experienced it. That's how your opinion is formed. And if you experience something else, sorry, you change again. So which one is yours? The previous opinion or the earlier one? Or both? If it's both, then which one is yours? Which one do you identify as you? Do we have different minds? Oh yeah. I like this. I also like this. This is my opinion. That's also my opinion. That's like having no opinion. It's like you like this, you also like that. Which one is you? Which one? Who are we? Certainly the body can't be you. Not only you. Because you grow up from a girl, a boy, to teenager, to adult, to elderly. You change. The body is not you. So, okay, my opinion is mine. Which is your opinion? And you can hold on to as kind of mine, me. Constantly change. And the usefulness comes from the use. The meaning of things lies in the use. Right. Apple is useful in use. So the problem is not the lens, color lens. Right. I can use it. Today is sunny, I pick up a sunglasses. If I need to read a book, pick up the thicker lens to read the book. If I need to see very far, I pick up the lens. You understand? So the first path of purification, clean. You gotta get the lens working properly first. Right? Path of recognition, take off the lens. See things as they are, without any filtration. See who we are. And what do we realize? Guogu, Jimmy Yu, is made up of non-Guogu, non-Jimmy Yu. It's made up of everything else, everyone else. So helping others is helping oneself. What is necessary for the society? What is necessary for your role as an individual, or as a family, as a nation? Selfless wisdom. Selfless wisdom, and it's very dynamic wisdom and compassion for the needs of those around you. Do you see what I'm saying? Do you follow? This is only the menu. If you want to eat, you come to a retreat. You practice. Tonight, only tell you what the menu is like. If you think it's useful, then makes sense. You know, because you have to think about it. Where do all of our vexations, troubles, anxiety come from?
Mind.
Yeah. Mind. Can you be a little more specific?
Our own mind.
Your own mind, your own views, own opinion.
We kind of make it up or have an opinion of it.
Mm-hmm.
You should be a certain way, or shouldn't be this way.
Yeah. Should, ought, good, bad. Anyone else? Where is your vexations? Fanao. Where does it come from?
Karma.
Karma? Explain that. In your turn.
Actually, from the karma is the intention to have some volition and result. But the karma, the behind the karma is like a greed, hatred, ignorance, doubt, that kind of stuff. Create the karma. So this is all in together.
Nice theory. I want to hear from you, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear from your personal experience. Where does your vexation come from? When you discover you're annoyed or something.
Okay.
What's going on there? What's going on there? Forget about the Buddha's words and language. The Chan approach, right? Cut right through. What is actually there?
Self.
Be more concrete. What do you mean by self? Your opinion? Like, I don't want this. That's why. Okay. Give you a concrete example. When you're growing up, your mom is giving you medicine, but you hate the taste. Say, drink it. What is exactly that experience, your moment you look at that? And you get annoyed. What is that? When you were 5 or 6, you don't know about self, no self. You don't know that term.
Right.
And when you're actually experiencing it, what is actually happening?
Uncertainty or insecurity.
Insecure. It's like, oh, is it going to taste good? I don't like the taste. I've never tasted it before. Right? This means possibly vexations may come from uncertainty, unsure. What else could it possibly come from? For example, you already tasted that medicine once, and now your mom is giving you another cup, and you know it tastes horrible. What is that? You're certain already. Oh, you're certain that I don't like that taste, and I'm giving you the taste. What is that happening right there?
Fear. The same feeling coming.
Same fear. Good. Fear is based on what?
Experience
of what?
Taste.
Taste of what?
Unpleasantness.
Getting back to the second of the 5 skandhas, sensations. Pleasant, unpleasant. This is the basic raw experience that we have. Or neutral, which give rise to, I like it. Oh, I want more. I don't like it. I never want to see that thing again. Liking, not liking. My opinion, your opinion. Good, bad. You see it? At the very base of it, suffering. The degree of suffering that people feel, very different, right? Some of you came for the meditation class that Venerable Guo Xing gave. You willingly came. When you sit, well, you can't stand it. But imagine someone forced you to legs spread like a pretzel. You don't want to sit like that. Huh? So the same actual experience, your same legs, put in that same posture, your degree of suffering will change. Last year, when you didn't get into Buddhism, you know nothing about it, you don't really care about it. Someone put you in that, I don't want to sit here. Suffering. 5 minutes like pain. Today, afterwards, I can't wait to go home and start up a meditation routine in my life. What? Your level of suffering depends on what? Think about it. What? What does it depends on?
Thinking about it, your expectation.
Exactly, which means your perception. Meditation, the raw experience is just, you know, legs put up in the pretzel. It's nothing good or bad, right? If your leg happens to be stiff, it'll be bad because you're not used to that posture, right? But even when a person not used to that posture, she knows that's very good for her. She will willingly, happily sit there. That means it's not the sensation part we're dealing with now. It's perception. Please examine in your daily life your vexations, your anxiety, your worries, your trouble, all of which is colored by your perception. So in order to assess the usefulness of what I just said, you try it. Perception is like lens. Imagine if you change your lens, change your attitude towards things, your experience will be completely different. A very difficult co-worker, you can't stand him or her. you start to practice meditation, you start to integrate different ways, perspective on things, different attitude towards things. You say, oh, you know, I can't even pay someone to train me in patience. This person every day is training me how to be patient. It's free! And then as soon as you're going to work, great, another opportunity. Then your experience completely changes. Path of purification. This person is allowing me, giving me the opportunity to cultivate something that we rarely hear about in society anymore, called virtue. You know, this person is actually allowing me to cultivate virtue, patience, compassion. You can't even pay someone to do it. This person is doing it for free. It's wonderful. Then your whole dynamic will change. I guarantee your life will start to change. And your fortune will start to change. The type of things that you start to attract, the type of opportunities, and the type of people that you start to attract will start to change. All things are constructs of mind. And I'm not talking about just constructs, you live in your own imagination. Literally, your external causes and conditions in you will start to change. You will see things before you never noticed, opportunities. And different types of people will start to be attracted. You're like a magnet. That's the benefit. Does that sound enticing? I hope so. I'm very tired today, all day. I hope I'm be able to sell something to you guys, right? So, you know, something to think about. Something to reflect and to examine. And if it's useful, use it. I have nothing to gain. There's nothing that I want from you. Nothing. But I share with you, I know. In fact, the reason I'm here, the reason I decide to continue to teach, is actually to repay the gratitude to my teacher, who passed away in 2009. That's why I'm here. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to repay my gratitude to my teacher, his teachings, and to the Dharma, the Buddha, and the three jewels. So that's why I teach. And for you, this is the way you should do too. Ordinary way that people think, what can I get from this? What can I get from that? You know? The person is bad to me, I don't want any of it. The person is good to me, now let me get more of that. That's the cause of your suffering. Think about it. Examine yourself. And please don't get me wrong, I don't want you to walk away saying, well, that means I don't need anything now. Just not attach. I didn't say that. Okay? I'm saying path of purification. The virtuous things, the precepts, meditation, compassion, benefiting self and others. You try. Difficult people, wonderful. Free session of psychotherapy, changing your own habit mechanisms, patterns, is a free session to change it. Free lesson. And then your dynamic will change. Those of you who heard the word gong'an, koan, is a very famous one. It's called the sound of one hand clapping. How many of you have heard that? What's the sound of one hand clapping? What's the sound?
There's no sound.
There's no sound. I once asked that and someone went I said, wrong. The sound of one hand clapping. Now, people give us challenges. We usually think the problem is out there. They're the one who's wrong, giving us challenge, giving us difficult time, doing this wrong, doing that out there. That's like clapping. And when you blame someone, they will blame back. Someone blame you. If you don't clap back, the sound of one hand clapping, silent. Right? Someone, for example, your name is Mei Ling?
Lin Mei.
Lin Mei. Someone have a projected view of Lin Mei. You know, Lin Mei, she's this type of person, that type of person. You know, she's horrible. Oh, she's, tells you one thing, she does another thing. Right? When you hear that, how do you feel?
Angry.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, being angry is like clapping. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. If I want to give you a present, you don't like the present. You don't accept it. Mm-hmm. Who does the present belong to? Me.
Yeah.
I'll give you. You don't want it. It's mine. Mm-hmm. Right? If someone blame you for something you didn't do, mm-hmm. it's my view of you. It's not you. It's not Lin Mei. My construction of Lin Mei has nothing to do with you. It's my construction. Why should you live in my dream? To play my construction of you and keep on playing that role. It's like, I didn't do it. Why do you dare take me? You say, oh, okay. Thank you. I don't accept your present. No, it belongs to you. Yeah. That's the first step. Second step, you got to be more compassionate. You're going to help that person. You don't just say, I live in my own world. Anyone's, I can eat and throw garbage around, anything, do whatever I want, and your partner says, clean that up. You say, sorry, that's not my construction. You know, it's my world. That's wrong too. Right? You don't clean up your mess, and someone says, yeah, clean it up. You say, no. Why should I live your dream? I'm busy enough living my own dream. So, there's more to that. But most of our time, people argue. People have their own opinions. They have their own views of you. Or the situation is a meeting. Everyone's sitting down at the table, have a meeting. They have their own perspective. It's their perspective. Your ability to assess whether it's useful or not come from your ability to be free from your own opinion. You can actually see what the situation needs. This person has the best opinion. Or two people's opinion add together and we can solve the problem. But if you're holding on to your own view, my opinions, my project, then certain opportunities will be closed to you. New ideas, you don't actually see it. Actually, the company could benefit. You missed it because your views are very strong. The whole company goes downhill because of your opinion. You refuse. So, certain people are like that we meet at work, job, school, whatever. If it's your role to help, if it's your words that can benefit the right time, the right occasion, then you help. Otherwise, sometimes being silent is a better way. When that person is ready, then you come in and help and they will change. Different conditions. When conditions change, certain things happen. When different conditions change, something else happens. So being free, no self, no cupness, means that you can see very dynamically interactions of relationships. That's wisdom. That's also compassion. You have no fixed image. Do you have images? Sure, you can reflect all kinds of images. Do you know what an apple is? Yes, you know what an apple is. What is red? What is white? What is black? You know, clearly. Now, this is the theory, this is the menu. How do we get there? The most direct approach is directly do something to influence the mind, to cultivate the mind, to nurture, to refine, to discipline. That's why people meditate. They sit there and do nothing, just work on their mind. That's why Chan Zen is called a meditation school. Rituals, ceremonies, chanting sessions. Yes, it's cultivating the mind. But they do go about it through a meandering way. You know, through reading texts, chanting the melody, hearing the music, and they calm down and or initiation. Your teacher give you initiation. Oh, this person is giving me initiation. Very powerful. And then put yourself in a receptive mind. They give you power. And you think is more important than you. Allow it to reside in you. They all come at the mind. But the most direct approach is you sit there. Two things you accomplish in meditation. One, develop ability to focus. Two, develop ability to be aware. That's the purpose of meditation. Focus and aware. This is the innate ability of our minds. There are many terms for this. From a scattered mind, once you focus, you can attain shamatha, qi. Developed further, you enter into samadhi, ding. The natural ability to be aware, from scattered, you be aware, it's called vipassana. Develop further, prajna. See? So the ability to be with something, to stay with something, and the ability to be aware, these are intrinsic, natural abilities that we have. It's just that now it's all scattered. So we need to hone it in. We need to refine it. We need to discipline it. Learn to stay with something and be aware. That's like the sun, the shining sun. If you put a magnifying glass, if you put a solar panel, you focus it, and then the power becomes very strong. Through concentration, your ability to gain insight, your ability to perceive things is more accurate. Imagine trying to think through a problem with a scattered mind versus thinking through a problem when the mind is very clear. Like the lifeguard. Lifeguard is not on the sand mingling with everyone. He can't help anyone. At least no one that's far. Right? Maybe just immediate environment. The lifeguard is standing still on his chair high. Everyone see very clearly. Why? Similarly, when there's less chattering here in our minds, conversely, more aware what's there. So, concentration, awareness. That's the way to do it. Meditate. Now, we've been living our lives years without disciplining the mind. Just think whatever it wants. Now you try to discipline the mind. That's like trying to get a wild monkey. Now you're trained to do things. The monkey doesn't listen to you, but maybe if you lure it, give it a banana, a little piece of thing, and then maybe you start to say, hey, this is my friend. Similarly, when you begin to meditate, you lure the mind. you say to yourself, this is an appointment with myself. An appointment with myself. All day long I have appointment with job, family, friends, work, task, home, you know, all kinds of, my pet. You lose yourself. So this is my time. Then you make meditation quite precious. Look, today you lost yourself again. You had your 15 minutes you're supposed to sit and you missed it. Too bad. Think that way. Then you never want to miss it. Right? Every day, this is my time. My appointment with myself. That's like the wild monkey. You give it a banana, just a small piece of it. The monkey. Maybe there's more after that. You know, tomorrow. Another banana. 15 minutes to 20 minutes. You go for quality, not quantity. Quality sitting time. And when you sit, meditate on the breath. Something simple. In and out of the breath. Be aware of the sensation of breath. The silkiness of breath. Smoothness. Enjoy to be with your body. Usually people are not with their body. Mind and body are split. Their body is doing something, their mind is somewhere else. That's how we live our lives. Body, mind, split. And now we train ourselves to be with the body. Enjoy. At least 15 minutes. That's the only time you can be with yourself. And you see, even 15, 20 minutes a day, for the rest of the day, you'll be happier. You'll be clearer. If you make it into a habit, next time someone yells at you during the day, go back to your breath. Relax the body. The principle is, relax, natural, clear. Please remember this. Relax, natural, clear. Relax body, breath natural, mind clear. Clear of what? You need a method. You can't just say, I'm just going to bliss out. I'm just going to empty my mind. No, that's not going to happen. You need a method, an anchor, like the breath, to do it. Always wander off, you bring it back to the breath. You wander off, bring it back. You fall asleep, you adjust the posture, bring it back to the breath. Again and again and again, this monkey mind will start to be more disciplined. And you have the right attitude. Don't suppress anything. Don't grasp, follow anything that come up in meditation. Can you remember that? What are the three principles? Relax, natural, clear. Relax what? Body. Natural what? Natural breath. Clear of what? Clear the mind. The mind is doing the method. Clear the method. What is the method? The breath. What's the right attitude when you use the breath? Don't suppress. Try to get rid of things and don't grasp onto things. For example, you have a lot of wandering thoughts. Don't suppress it. Don't try to get rid of it. The attitude, you know, I want to concentrate more. Why am I having a lot of wandering thoughts? That's like the water is already having a ripple. And you use your hand trying to stop the wave. Just leave it alone. That's the principle. That's how the water waves quiet down. Or you're entering a very good state. Hey, I'm meditating very well. How did I get here? I want more. That's like patting down the water again. I want more. Can't do it. When your mind lake. It's very calm. It reflects the autumn moon. And he's like, moon! Oh, let me grab it! Then the water is stirred up again. Right. And then the moon is just fragmented, okay, in pieces. So you don't grasp. What about big waves in this pond? A lot of ripples, what do? You don't do anything, just use the method. You don't worry about the wandering thoughts, you just enjoy the breath. Then the mind will naturally calm down. You see, that's the principle. Now this is a very common method that all Buddhist traditions share. Right? Tibetan, South Asian, East Asian, all schools. The distinctive method, the method that I talked about. So, the path of recognition. That's a little different. This path of purification, principle of relaxing, natural, clear. This path of purification. Most of the time when we are vexed, anxiety, I guarantee you, your body's tense. So you learn this principle, you master this principle, relax, natural, and then you can see things more clearly. You can even see things in a reverse way. This person is training me to be more patient. Transform. Path of transformation. Path of recognition. Two distinctive methods. I'll just introduce it here. We have books that you can read more about if you're interested. In the future, you can do retreats with us and you'll be able to understand. First method is called the silent illumination. This is called the methodless method. All things are constructs, right? Like a color lens. So the very beginning, let go of the grasping hand. Take off the lens. Whatever the mind wants to rest, want to reside, want to abide, want to lean on, want to depend on, want to attach, let go. So it's just a method of continual moment-to-moment clarity, not allowing the mind to grasp onto anything. Silent illumination. Silent refers to the natural stillness of the mind. Our mind is originally not angry, not jealous, not covetous. Originally not there. So naturally it's silent, free from these things. Illumination means the natural clarity of mind. Our mind is naturally clear. It's just that we got bogged down into the conflict of the thoughts. It's like there's room. This room is naturally spacious, isn't it? You don't have to create it. But the furniture could be a mess, right? Now, what do you think, Barry? Does the furniture, messy furniture, have anything to do with the spaciousness of this room? If a glass of water, you put a lot of filth in it, does it have anything to do with the nature of water, wetness?
Just be dirty water,
it's still water. The true nature of mind is free from vexations. Intrinsically free. Moment to moment liberation. Just think, you don't even have to pay someone to use a method to liberate your thoughts, wandering thoughts. You just sit there, they liberate themselves. Regain their natural clarity. It's not clear of something. Not clear of something, it's just, it's originally free. Do you understand? It's like the sky. The sky, you know, you have clouds, tornadoes, typhoons, thunderstorm, sunny, it's nothing to do with the sky. The sky is still the sky. So when you sit there, it's very difficult to do. That's why this is an advanced method. Question? So when you sit, Sometimes people describe this method as just sitting. Just sitting. It's just sitting. This just sitting is not the beginner, no meditation experience. Like, what are you guys doing there? Are you just sitting like a dummy? Yeah, we're just sitting like a dummy. Not that kind of just sitting. Right? Not allow the mind to construct, create, fabricate, and latch onto, depend on anything. Right from the very beginning, take off the lens. Say, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Let go. What about breath? My mind is very scattered. Should I use the breath? Let go. Should I count the breath? Let go. It's very hard to do. You can't do it. You can only do it when the mind is sufficiently calm. That's why people don't use this method until they first go through the meditation on the breath. Second approach, this is called silent illumination, which is a natural state of mind. Silent illumination is a description of the awakened mind. 觉悟的心默照 The second method is called 公案 Koan. You have a lot of conceptual thoughts. All of our vexations come from our perception. The degree of our suffering depends on our perception, concepts, feeling, thoughts. Okay. Use poison against poison. I'll give you a meaningless question. What's the sound of one hand clapping? No meaning. What's the sound? What's the meaning of emptiness? It's already empty. Why the hell are you asking? Right? Or something maybe more meaningful. Who am I? The point is not actually to come up with an answer like, oh, I got it. I am, you know, the five skandhas, you know, form, sensation, perception, volition, consciousness, all of these dynamically interacted. That's concepts. The purpose of the gongan is to allow the mind to concentrate, to focus on something, and that something is a conundrum. It's an impossibility. Force the conceptual mind into a state of non-conceptuality until what we call the person entering into a great doubt. Not suspicion, it's the sense of wonderment. Who am I? I don't know. Who am I? I don't know. What is the sound of one hand clapping? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What is it? What is it? What is it? Until all conceptuality ceases. The person is in that state, yet cannot construct anything. But it's not like an idiot, right? The mind is very alive, very wakeful, clear, yet a sense of doubting, sense of wonderment, sense of unknown. And then some catalyst will happen, either the teacher will see that you're ready, present you with some problem, maybe slap you, or maybe shake you, or maybe you're just doing something by yourself, you know, sweeping the, there are cases in Chan history, sweeping the floor, the gravel, sweep the pebble, hits the bamboo, the cell, suddenly, the last bit of attachment, suddenly drops away, awakening. Two approaches. First one, from the beginning, stop constructing things. The method of no method. Until suddenly, conceptuality just drops away. Not that you have no memory, you can think. Now the lens, the glasses are no longer there. Your thinking is no longer self-referential. Just benefit me, not benefit me. I want this. I want that. No more of that kind of thinking. Your thinking is actually a natural wisdom response to the needs of the environment, other people. Like a mirror. That's compassion. Right? So, first way, silent illumination. Second, gongan, koan. Use poison against poison. These are two distinctive features of the Chan Zen tradition. more advanced methods. That's the path of recognition, recognizing the true nature of our minds. It's like recognizing the space in this room. Does dirty furniture have anything to do with the nature of this space? No. So does your vexations, greed, hatred, ignorance, jealousy, does it have anything to do with your true nature? No. After a person is enlightened, all those things become resources to help sentient beings. Great angry determination. People need anger, manifest anger. They need compassion, manifest compassion. So it's not that you become enlightened and you let everyone walk all over you because you have no self now. I'm empty now. No. Extremely clear. The mind is extremely clear. You don't lose your memory. You don't lose your capability to think, to conceptualize, to make abstractions, right? To anticipate the future. Right? You don't lose any of that. Except now, you can freely use it without being used by it. They no longer function on the basis of self-attachment, selfishness. So all of the resources becomes very useful now. Tools for compassion. Does that make sense? So tonight I've laid out a path for you, a map, blueprint. It doesn't matter what tradition of Buddhism you practice, eventually it is there. So it's not actually about the ritual, the initiation, or this furniture is better than that furniture. It has nothing to do with the nature of space in this room. But in the process, it's still better to have a clean room than a messy room. Path of purification. You know, you live in an environment in which you are related to other people. So you clean up after yourself, it's like helping other people. Other people present you with challenges, it's like opportunity to practice patience. So that eventually you realize, actually, you know, clean, unclean, messy, pure, you're free. And then you can freely use these rituals, these gadgets, systems of meditation, Buddhist doctrine, you can freely use according to the needs of people. You know, some people don't need, some people like ritual. Are you kidding? Ritual. Some people don't like that, they just want to meditate. They become too attached to meditation, they come to do ritual. They become just ritual. It's like, oh, I mean, I did 100,000 prostrations, I'm really good, I'm getting it now, I'm really good now. Okay, stop doing that, meditate. So, anything can become objects of attachment. Anything can become kind of spiritual materialism. Even Buddhism. Even meditation, right? And so medicine can become poison. So it's just a matter of, you need a good teacher, you need a community of practitioners, like-minded fellow practitioners, you can always tap into the resources, group meditation, you need daily practice. Simple thing. Start with the breath. And then, the more you go, happier you'll be. Okay? Okay. Any questions? Yes.
So for more job.
Silent illumination?
Yeah, silent illumination. When you say let it go, you know, remember any image come to you, you let it go means actually.
What does that mean?
Yeah, it means
forget. In the beginning stages of silent illumination, the practice is called just sitting. So there's actually something for you to do. You just sit. Like for example, how do you know you're sitting there now?
I feel my legs, I feel the body, so I'm not sick.
Very good. You have the sense of presence, the body, the sense of bodily weight. You know the posture. So what happens when you have a wandering thought? What do you go back to? You go back to the act of sitting.
Okay.
Posture. What is actually happening in the present moment. You don't go back to some abstraction, natural spaciousness of mind, or you know, emptiness, or no. You go back to what is actually happening in the moment, which is this act of sitting. So when you're sitting like this, wandering thought come back to sitting. How do you know you're sitting? You're not thinking about sitting. You're sitting because you're aware you're sitting. Sense of body weight, you know your posture, you have sensations, you just sit. Until one's mind becomes more focused, naturally, less wandering thoughts, and then self-grasping, conversely, becomes diminished. Right? At that time, it's a kind of oneness of body and mind, oneness of self and others. The natural environment becomes unified. When a person has a lot of vexations, anger, emotional frictions, any little thing can take that person off. Strong opposition. Blue jays, happy birds chirping can piss you off when you sit, right? When you're vexed. When a person's self diminished, self-grasping, less wandering thoughts, then there's a natural oneness. And birds, me, sitting, it's the same thing. It's in the present. When you drink water, you're drinking. There's not even a need for a label, water, I'm drinking water. It's just the experience. So there are other stages of practice there. You don't need to. There's a book called Methodless Method by my teacher. You can read all about the whole book about silent rumination, his talks. If you want to understand the Gong'an method, there's two ways to call it. In Chinese, we call it Gong'an, or we call it Hua Tou. Basically, it's the same. There's a book called, that Master's written, it's called Shattering the Great Doubt. Retreat Talks. You can read more about it.
What is the name of your master?
Master Shen Yan. Shen Yan. There's books there for sale. You know, you can also go to Barnes & Noble. It's probably there. Look through the Eastern religion section. Sometimes they put it self-help section or spirituality. Just go to that section. Or you can just go to the kiosk and type Shen Yan. Shengyen. His books will come out. If you read, it's best to read from, especially newcomers, it's best to read from teachers who the whole Buddhist community thinks is a good teacher. To begin, like His Holiness Dalai Lama, you know, books, simple books like Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, or my teacher's books. The whole community is a good book. You read. Some, because spirituality, if you go to that section, Eastern thought, you know, self-help, there are so many charlatans. Fakes. They're just authors. You know, like, there's a distinction between author, they write about things, and actually people that are actually teachers. You know? Anyone can write about a book. So you don't know what to choose. So choose from a safe source, generally. And then you can shop around a little bit, which one you like. You have an affinity with, and go with that. My teacher has many books. Do we have all of his books here? Yeah. There's also a library. Please make use of it. This is a library. You can actually borrow books.
Which side is that? Which side is that?
English part, no, all of this, this place is a library, it's a Buddhist library, right? So you take out your name, your address, telephone number, you can borrow books. If you want to read, you want, before you buy, you want to read it first, read it, borrow it. I guarantee you, after you read one chapter, you say, I gotta buy this. I gotta underline. We don't want a book returned with all these underlined notes. You buy your own copy and then you can do it. You know? All kinds of good books here. Sunday is a special activity at Mid-America Buddhist Association. Venerable Guoxing and I will give talks, him in the morning, myself in the afternoon. And there's a ritual celebration, commemoration of the Buddha's birthday.
Is it celebration every year at the same time, or is it changing?
They go by the lunar calendar, so it changes. And also go by people's convenience. Like, for example, May 8th is supposed to be this year's lunar calendar Buddhist birthday celebration. But that's last Sunday, so people can't do it, so they put it into this Sunday. You know? So
how much notice do they usually give? How much notice does MAVPA usually give?
Maba, probably a month ahead, there's already flyers you can kind of see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is a big, you know, ceremony day for Buddha.
And every year they have two speakers, as far as I understand. This year they just happen to invite two speakers from the same organization. Usually it's like, you know, one from this, one from that, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. The reason they change is also because they're collaborating with other Buddhist organizations. So everyone had to come up with a date that they can all come. That's why it's this Sunday. Otherwise it would be, because next Sunday, well, this organization, they have their own Vesak celebration, it's this week. And so they try to coordinate with a lot of different groups. So there's like eight groups or something. There's a Thailand, there's Laos, there's, is there a Tibetan?
Tibetan, yes, they kind of
Tibetan, know. There's the Vipassana, there's the Insight Meditation, there's a main group that's hosting it. You know, this year is at Maba. So there's news all around. Once we open our eyes to certain things, and we see it everywhere. It's like when we change glasses. You put another pair. Let me see everywhere. Everyone's talking about Dharma. And you discover your colleagues. He happened to practice meditation. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. You never know. So, opportunities open. Our future, our fortune, our life changes according to our perception. This is the way to happiness. But don't calculate. My fortune changes. Maybe I should practice Dharma more in order to get rich. That doesn't work. That won't work. Only it comes from sincerity. Then your presence, that magnet, will start to. Different causes and conditions will change in your life. So it has to be sincere. You don't believe it? You try. Next year or 2 years from now, when I come back, you can do a report whether what has changed in your life. There may be some difficulties ahead of us, but if we practice, we can transform difficulties into something that will be nourishing. So some challenges in life originally is very big and very traumatic. But because we practice the Dharma, now they're just pretty big. If we don't, they become tremendous. So big problems become medium. Medium problem becomes small. Small problem becomes no problem. So it's not that the more you practice Dharma, your life is perfect now. No, there will be things. Because why? You planted your own karmic bag. Things will manifest. But when they manifest, your perception will change. It's like this. The same drop of salt, I put in a cup of water, make you drink it. Versus I putting a whole tub of water, you drink it. You don't even sense the salt, right? The same degree of salt, pinch of salt, put into a person's mind, the cup, very narrow, small, a shot glass, that's pretty salty. Right? If the vastness of your mind, compassion, receptivity, vast, same pinch of salt, you don't even taste it. Karmic, karma still ripens, yet it can have no effect on you. So I'm just giving you a shot, immunization shot, just in case in the future you encounter some difficult times. Don't say, "Hey, Guo Gu says I'm not supposed to encounter." I didn't say that. Right? So transform your life to be happier, wise, more compassionate person for yourself and others. Have a good night.
All right. Pay respect to the Buddha. Three half bow. Second bow. Third bow. Next hand. Let's pay respect and thank you, our teacher, Boku. Half bow. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you need help to set up?
Okay, that's it. That's fine.
So I guess for now, if you can fold the square towels under, put it underneath the round cushion like this, that will be fine. Okay.
Yeah.